The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
What's up, fellow addicts? It's Shannon, the producer of The SDR Show. On today's show, we have the hilarious and super talented comedian and actor Rob Schneider joining Ralph Sutton and James L. Mattern. He shares lots of behind-the-scenes stories from his time at SNL, from working on the movie 50 First Dates, on Don't Mess with the Zohan, and a bunch more. He also teaches James a lesson he'll remember for the rest of his life. Guys, we do the show live twice every week on Wednesdays and Saturdays at 9 p.m. Eastern at gasdigitalnetwork.com/live. You can watch that for free, but if you use promo code SDR30, only for the remainder of this year, you're going to get a 30-day free trial to check out every single episode we've ever done, as well as all the other amazing content on Gas Digital Network. You'll get the episode sooner, you'll get to hang out in the live chat, get the HD streams, so many perks, and all of that risk-free for 30 days. All right, guys, here it is, the Rob Schneider episode of The SDR Show.
This is the intro to the shit show. Sex, drugs, and rock and roll. This is a hit show. Show me a tit show. Please, someone fuck the hoe. It's weed, I beat, it's hookers and blow. It's art, it's art, you need to know. The SDR Show. Let's go.
It is The SDR Show, sex, drugs, and rock and roll show. I am Ralph Sutton. As always, follow us everywhere at The SDR Show. Shannon with us as always. Big J had to bail because he's a busy, important man. Apparently, too good for me these days, but James Mattern.
And me as well, I guess. I didn't know.
As well. James Mattern joining us. Let's just bring him in right at the top of the show. I mean, actor, comedian, and nowadays he likes to go by Father of El King.
Yes, why not?
Is called Asian Mama Mexican Kids. Also, by the way, happy belated birthday. It is Rob.
Thank you.
How are you, buddy? Happy birthday.
I'm good. You know, I mean, hey, hanging in there. I'm just enjoying the Arizona weather. I moved to Arizona.
Let me ask you this right at the top of the show.
Yes, sir.
A Halloween birthday as a kid, is that a good thing or a bad thing? Because you get
No. I mean, there was always something to do on my birthday.
Yeah, because my birthday is New Year's Eve. But I always felt like New Year's Eve kind of get lumped in with the holidays and
school. I know, that sucks. No, yeah. That's a terrible birthday. Whereas, like, I think January 1st would have been a continuation of the thing. Well, and everybody would go and be tired. But no, New Year's is pretty good, too. But,
well, it's funny you should say, though, because I have a twin brother, and his birthday is January 1st. We're 4 months apart, and we're born in different days.
Yeah. That was better for, like, hockey and sports.
Yeah.
If you're born in the beginning of the year, you have a huge advantage.
Is that true?
If you're born at the end, yeah. Well, because you got that extra leap on the other kids.
Yeah,
if you look at the professional hockey. Look at the professional hockey players. They're all born January, February, March.
Really? Because you get
like, you know, the attention. The bigger kids that do better, they get the more attention from the coaches. And those kids who are a little bit bigger have a little bit of advantage. The ones who were born earlier.
I'm going to play
brother as opposed to you.
But that made more sense when the time to start school used to be, the cutoff was December, January. It's not that way anymore. At least not in America. So you'd be younger because you'd be in the early part of the year. So if you were in third grade, unless you're supposed to be 10, the cutoff used to be January, so you'd be the new school year. You'd be the youngest in the school, but they moved it to September. So now it doesn't matter as much. Does that make sense?
No, that doesn't make sense, because I think it is, like, when you start the school year in August or September, if you're one of the bigger kids because you were born, so you're still squeezed into that second or third grade. Then, well, for hockey, I'm just telling you, for hockey, it's a huge deal.
You're talking to a man who's never held a hockey stick. Is that what it's called? A stick? I don't even know.
It's a stick, Ralph. Yeah.
It's a stick.
I sound like it's such a good sports guy.
No, but I don't know. That's one of the things that, like, I was born at the end of October, so, like, a huge disadvantage for sports. Also, being Filipino, also a huge disadvantage for sports.
And not being a very large man, to my knowledge, so it's
yes. All those things. And also, like, tickling, that's a thing that's got tickling. It's like these sticks. This is like, they used to do this thing, these sticks where you hop. Instead of, like, you know, jump rope where the rope hits, doesn't hurt or anything, these are sticks. You jump with the sticks. It's a very Filipino thing. Tickling, it's called, and like tinkling. And so So what happens is if you get stuck and it smack, it's right on your ankle.
Oh, because I was about to
say. Tougher culture.
If your coach was tickling you when you were in third grade, that's a whole other problem.
I think it's called tickling or whatever it is. I don't know. We got to get some Filipinos to call and check it out.
By the way, I have to say this. There's nothing to do with this interview. Just have to say this. I'm a little bit out of sorts because I was stuck in an elevator for an hour and a half just now. Freaking
seriously?
Seriously. It's never happened before in my life.
No, it's happened to me a couple times.
With a girl I was on a second date with.
Wow.
We were going to go for lunch. And we were just stuck in my elevator, and it was 100 degrees. And I was trying to figure out, okay, I may not make the interview. I'm sweating. I don't know this girl that well. But I was trying to be normal.
How did she handle it?
She handled it better than I did. I don't do well in heat, and I was drenched in sweat. So nothing cooler than sweating like a maniac in an elevator.
Yeah.
And we had to call the fucking fire department, and they had to pry the door open. And I had to boost her out, and I had to get out. And then now here I am. Hello.
So what apartment complex, where do you live?
Exact address. I live on Avenue B and 10th in the East Village. And but it's the elevator opens up into the apartment. So it's okay. One apartment per floor.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, it's nice, except when this happens. So they had to break into the apartment below me to open the doors so I could get out.
Did you think about like a Tom Cruise moment potentially where like I can climb out of this bitch. I can climb on top and then I can just climb up the wires. Did that cross your mind at all?
What I thought would have been cooler though is when they finally opened the door, if I kicked her out of the way a la George Costanza and just got out before her. But man, I mean, I'm sweating. I literally just walked in. I was like, oh my God, that was terrible. And hey, how you doing?
It is good though when you have situations like that just to see like – it makes you realize what stress really is. And like the stress that you think is stress, isn't it stress?
Right.
It's
a choice. COVID did that for everybody, I feel,
it's a
as
choice.
Well.
It and did, I just, yeah. I mean, I feel like I got a pretty good handle on that.
I saw, by the way, which I want to get into because I think that you maybe started and stopped your podcast for COVID. I'm not sure because you haven't done a new episode in months.
Well, we moved. We stopped because we moved.
Oh, okay.
And we're out in Arizona. So it's, I mean, we're going to get it up again and do it. But truthfully, like I was just happy to get the hell out of California. California is like a Siberian gulag on the beach. It just isn't free. You know, I mean, I wanted my kids to be able to go to school. And I just think that like, my family's in the healthcare industry. So, you know, I feel like I got a good handle on what's happening. And it's a real thing. And if you have a vulnerability and if you have comorbidities and things like that, it's dangerous. If you don't, it's not, you know,
right. Unless playing devil's advocate, unless you get it and give it to somebody unintentionally and you're the reason.
Yes.
You're the reason your grandmother died.
I know, but that's another thing too. It's like, there's never been in the history of the world, people have been quarantined who are perfectly healthy. I think if grandma is, you know, that's the excuse that they use. And, you know, look, if people want to do that, that's up to them individually. But I don't think it's a reason to shut the world down. And I never will think that.
Right. I feel that it was a knee-jerk reaction when we first started. And now that we have an
remember it was 2 weeks, flatten the curve? Remember they stopped doing that?
Well, that was funny for you. I watched the last episode of your podcast, See What Happens with your wife. And it was in September. It was like, I think it was May or something. And you said, what's going to happen? I don't know. Let's find out, man. I think we'll open up soon. And then you never did another episode.
I know. We did. I know. So we're going to get back doing it. It's just, you know, setting up the cameras and doing everything here. And we moved. And then it's with the kids. And I got my little kid coming here now. Hi. ¿Cómo estás? A Patricia? Oh, sí, sí. Ahora, gracias, gracias.
¿Dónde está el baño? Does that help anything?
Sure.
Well, that's all I know.
No, I think it's my wife's calling me. That's what the rumor I heard. But no, so it's we have to make adjustments and we have to find out and we have to see how much are we really willing to move and change society and change the way we live our lives out of fear, you know? And I think you can't operate that way. You can't live that way. And the idea, I think it comes from a deep rooted problem, you know, that, which is the idea that there's something wrong in nature and that we have to fix it and we have to correct it somehow with science. And this is, it was like, you know, nature's perfect. Nature's going to do what nature does. And the idea that we're somehow going to come in and correct this mistake. I don't buy that. So I think that in essence is a lot of problems that we have.
My answer most of the time is that I know there are smarter people than me and I'm not going to try and
But relying on like these experts to always, you know, some of these experts too thought like spraying children with DDT back in the 50s was a good idea.
But can I ask one, just to change the subject for 1 second, James, you moved to the side of me. Can you move to your left for a second, James?
Yeah.
Would you have not made your bed for this interview? Is that too much to ask?
I don't believe in making beds, man, because I'm just going to get back into son of a bitch. So what's the purpose?
Yeah, Rob Schneider here. Could you not look nice on camera? Put your fucking head together.
Yeah, but I'm wearing a nice Ramones Archie shirt for Rob. I think he probably is into at least one of the two things.
Oh, yeah.
I've got the same Richard Pryor box set, but back in my apartment in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
I don't believe in that make the bed thing makes you successful. I don't feel like if I start making it in 3 weeks, I'm going to find like stock for Microsoft, you know?
Interesting that you say that because, you know, Jamie, there's a, you know, when you got little kids, it's like you start thinking about like, because that makes perfect sense. You know, I'm just going to get back into it. What's the big deal? But then you're like, that goes a long way. Why am I going to shower? I'm just going to shower again. You know, why?
Showers feel good, sir. I will say that. I like a good shower to reset.
You know, why am I going to leave the house? I'm just going to come back again. You know, you start to take that too far.
James, why brush your teeth? Why brush your teeth?
All right. Yeah. First of all, you guys are now trying to get me caught in some Nevada logic. Just because I went to UNLV, I'm not as smart as the rest of you sons of guns, except Shannon. God bless her. Staten Island Community College or wherever she went. But look.
Community College here, too.
There
I didn't
you go.
Graduate either. You know what? The thing, I don't know. We're going to have to come to some sort of sanity.
You
know?
By the way, I make my bed religiously when I first get up in the morning. That's just
Does that mean... If I make my bed, do you think COVID will just go away? I'll do that. If that's part of the process, then I'll do it. If that is flattening the curve, I'll do it right now.
I think a little higher of you if your bed was made right now, I'll tell you that much. Is he making his bed? Look, I forced him into it. I love that I did that. That's great.
It is good. It's just telling yourself that you're going to have some sort of organization. You know, there's going to be some,
right. I agree
some order to your day.
We are on the same page there, sir. Let me ask you this. So I watched your special, Asian Mama, Mexican Kids, right, on Netflix.
Yes, thank you.
Very much enjoyed it, but I have a question.
So, yes, sir.
And I saw you do an interview with a friend of the show, Bert Kreischer, recently, where you talked about it, and he said it, which I was this way also. I know you so much from SNL and from movies, which I want to get into later, that I kind of forgot that you started out as a stand-up and then remembered seeing your stand-ups. You know, all of a sudden... When I saw that, I'm like, oh, yeah, I remember him doing stand-up. Did you take a long break from it?
For like 20 years. Right, and I got back into it about 10 years ago. Chris Rock is the one who talked me. We were doing Grown Ups 10 years ago. Uh-huh. And he was the one who talked me into doing it again. And I honestly missed it. But I also respected the art form enough to not just like jump back in with like one toe. You got to really do it and commit yourself to doing it and do probably nothing else during that time. So that you can get great at it. I mean, I think the interesting thing, and in my own opinion, I think there's always been great comedians. I mean, you've always had Richard Pryor, and there's, you know, you've had like, you know, the Bob Newharts and back in the 60s and the Dick Gregorys and the Richard Pryor and George Carlin in the 70s and then Steve Martin and then, you know, and then Jerry Seinfeld, Jay Leno was the greatest comedian of his era. And David Letterman will tell you that. But then I don't think you've ever had as many comedians who are at their peak at the same time as now. I mean, if you look at like Bill Burr and you look at, you know, Chappelle and Chris Rock and, you know, and Sarah Silverman when she's really, you know, doing stand up. I think they're great. And I think that's very interesting time. And right now is an interesting time because I think it's a reflex to, you know, to self censor yourself. And so it's a very interesting time. And in a culture that's devouring itself.
What's interesting, by the way, the reason why I brought that first part up with the taking a long break is I watched this documentary, and I don't know if you know the guy. It's called Where Have You Gone, Lou DiMaggio? And it's a comic that came up with you guys, a lot of you guys from New York. I didn't know him. But he took a 25-year break, and he documented himself getting back into comedy. And it's like Larry David's in it, Ray Romano's in it. A lot of it talking about this guy who took 25 years off of comedy and just decided to let me start doing this again. It was fascinating to watch, and it made me think of you probably are going or went through the same process because he said the same thing where you just kind of, you have to go back in full force. It has to be what you're doing. You're a stand-up.
Yeah, and you have to also, like, because when I got back into it, I just trusted my agent at the time, who I quickly fired because he had me doing some gig where I wasn't prepared enough to, like, be charging money for it. You have to go back and get your sea legs first, mm-hmm. and then you have to be able to kind of find your voice again. And that's different. And that takes years. So, right. I mean, it's not something that you can just, you know, Jerry Seinfeld talks about it, you know, like, I don't care how famous you are. The audience gives you 2 minutes, maybe three. Then you got to be funny. And that's true. It kind of, the audience is the great equalizer. You really have to, deliver and keep delivering. And, you know, it's interesting because Adam Sandler was saying this thing, and because when I shot the comedy special and I showed it to him, and because I was, you know, I did part of, I was in his comedy special. I was the only other guy in it, the only other comedian in it. And he said, you know, it's not fair. And I go, what? Mm-hmm. He said, well, you know, like your daughter, Elle, she gets in a year, musicians get a year and a half to work on their new album. For us, our comedy special, we get one night, maybe two shows. That's it. You know?
Right, right.
And we're like, wow. And it's because it's expensive. I mean, Adam actually got to shoot his stuff.
Wasn't his over, was over like over a year? It took like
Shot his over, and that's why I think he did it. Was just like, just kind of take the pressure off. But most of his show was shot in two nights in Jersey, and I was there for both of those. And the first night on a Wednesday was good, but it wasn't like there. And Chris Rock was there, and Kevin James was there. Chris Rock ran backstage and said, he literally said, like, fuck the show. It's all about the special. Fuck the show. Just if you need to change something, whatever, just it's about the special. And this is a guy who knows.
Right.
And so I was watching and learning from that. And then the second night he did it was the best I'd ever seen him. And the audience was on fire, and it was a beautiful theater in Jersey. And, with like the four tiers, and it was like, honestly, wherever the Philharmonic would play, they'd play there. And mm-hmm. he was just great. But Adam put in the time. I mean, he literally put in hundreds and hundreds of shows for several years before he did that. And he's the hardest working guy in show business. He's working on three movies right now.
James, didn't you say you're in an area right now where they're filming the movie, or is that wrong?
Yeah, I'm in suburban PA. And when I was here like a month or two ago, I think you all were filming in this area. I'm in the mecca of America's Playground of Royersford, PA. What up?
Well, yeah, they were filming a movie out there. And I think it's an idea. I'm not extremely familiar with it completely, but it's like LeBron James and Adam had this idea. And Adam's shooting it, and then he's going to take 9 months off and then shoot it again when they can hopefully have audiences in the basketball stadiums, because it's a basketball movie.
Oh, that's interesting. And also, by the way, just a little bit to talk about, it was a really nice moment. Your daughter comes out. I didn't even realize that your daughter was Elle King until watching the special, because she, I guess, purposely did. I read something about where she said she didn't want to be known as your daughter because she felt she'd be getting a leg up. So she wanted to go out with her, with, I guess, your ex-wife's name or whatever it is. And I never made the association. And it was like, is that?
Well, no, God bless her. I mean, it's not fun being a famous kid. It's not fun. Because it's like, you don't know who your real friends are. And like, especially like, literally, because my sister called me one time and she was mad at me, my sister April. And she said, will you tell me next time? And I'm like, what? Will you tell me when you're going to have a movie come out where you show your ass? And I went like, okay. I mean, I didn't, you know. So you don't think of the real world problems when you're making stuff. You just think it's funny. And then
also a funny phone call to make to your sister. All right, sis, my ass is out.
So my daughter wouldn't go to school. Like, I remember when The Hot Chick came out, she didn't go to school for a couple of days. She wanted to see the lay of the land. You know, so that's cool. But I'm happy for her. And I don't blame her. I really respect her that she wants to forge her own way. And it's great. I mean, I remember she had a record deal when she was 16.
It's crazy.
With Warner Brothers. And she had great little songs and everything. And then, you know, it didn't work out. It didn't go anywhere. And she was frustrated. And I said, that's the best thing that could happen to you. Because now you got to, and she goes, what do you mean? I said, well, now you got to ask yourself, why do I really want to do this? Is it because I want to be famous and get people to like me? Or am I an artist? I love this. I have a passion for it.
Right.
And I'm not doing it for people's approval. And I said, if you're listening to 3% of what I'm saying right now, I'll take it. And I said, also, you got to understand the record business. Everyone that you just did that deal with no longer works at Warner Brothers because the record business is completely collapsing and it's turning into something else. So you got to know this. You can't take this as it's a, you know, a rejection of you and your talent because you're great. And I think that's the best thing that ever happened to her. Cause I think, you know, making it when you're too young ain't good. And she was on David Letterman at 23 and she was saying on David Letterman. And I was on David Letterman at 23 as well.
Oh, wow. That's cool. Is it, that was your first time on Letterman? You were 23 and same.
It was my national, you know, network debut. But it's young. And also you don't know what you don't know anybody. You don't know what you're doing. I'm just like, my mom was a kindergarten teacher. My dad was in real estate. I don't know. I mean, I didn't know anybody. So, you just, the next thing you know, you're in it. And then, you know, am I still in it? You know, so it's tough. So, but she's done very well and I'm very proud of her. I'm glad she got the hell out of Hollywood. I think it's a dark time to be in California.
It's funny that I worked in rock music a long time and I was with this band that became really big, then disappeared, then came big again is a band called Buck Cherry. I don't know if you ever know them, but they were a big band years ago. And I was backstage with them. And this was after they had their second coming where they got big a second time because they got big, they got dropped, they got big again, right? And there was another band, I don't even know who it was. The guy was like the new hot band. And he came in like this ridiculous outfit with a snifter of brandy and being a real cocky asshole because their first album hit big. And he was just bossing everyone around. And then when he left, the singer turned to me and goes, yeah, we were those idiots too. When it comes easy, it comes easy. And now he's going to learn a year from now, he's going to be where I was and he's going to figure it out. So that's the example.
If you're lucky.
But speaking of your family, I want to tell you one thing that's a quick, funny story. And it looks like James had a bunch of questions already too. But so I was on the phone with this guy. I'm not going to say his name yet because it would give it away. And we were talking. I'm like, dude, does anyone ever tell you sound so much like Rob Schneider? Shannon will get a laugh at this. I'm very auditory based and I hear things. And I'm like, fuck, I know this guy's voice. He goes, well, actually, that's my brother. I was talking to Tom Green's manager, John Schneider. And I was like, fuck, dude, you sound just like him. And he goes, yeah, that's my brother.
Yeah. No, we're like twins, for better or worse.
Yeah,
I find like some of the mannerisms I do, he just does. And we don't see each other doing it. It's very odd. But you got a good ear.
Yeah. I mean, you guys sound so much alike. It was freaky to me because I didn't even know. His last name was Schneider. You know, just we were doing a podcast because I own the network here, and we were working on a deal with his podcast. And I was like, dude, you sound. I mean, I love all your movies so much. I know your voice.
Thank you. And
your inflections. And I was like, dude, you just sound so much like you. And he said, oh, it's kind of funny.
Yeah, it's been a wild thing, you know. But when I was a kid, depending on whatever, if he was in a good mood the year before or a shitty mood, that I would get treated that way by the teacher, incoming teacher. That's what happens when you're a younger kid.
Do you look alike?
Yeah, pretty much now. Yeah, yeah. My friend of mine who knows me really well thought I was him. I put on some weight during this. I can't just blame COVID. I put on weight the last 10 years and I've kept it on.
Well, now you can just easily just blame COVID and people will believe it because that's what happened to everybody. It's an easy one.
I'm getting back at it. I'm going to make a couple of movies here in Arizona. So I want to work. I want to do stuff. I have my kids. I got to get out of the house. And so I'm going to shoot some movies right here. And it's going to be fun. You know, the live performing, like literally next week, I'm going to be performing in minor league ballparks.
Wow.
Well, that's good. I mean, it's outside, right? It makes it easier for people to feel good about going, I would imagine.
Yeah, yeah. That's exactly it. Feel good about going. You know, people need to have that kind of reassurance. And whether it's real or not,
Who cares? Like, it's like a superstition. My dad had OCD. He would turn a light on, off, on before he left the room. It made him feel good. What am I going to tell him? Don't do it.
Yeah.
You know, whatever. Who cares?
We're very, we're very superstitious as people go, and fear, you know, seems to be the motivating factor to get people to do things that they wouldn't normally do.
Right. So, I agree with that.
And shaming people, but I'm sick of it, and I hope that that people, you know, in the Constitution, that, you know, the Bill of Rights, that in, you know, the Founding Fathers are like, yes, we have freedom, but you have the right to petition your government for grievances, except if some guy in China eats a bad sandwich, then you can't, you know.
It'd be cool if that was in there. That'd be pretty freaky. James, do you have a question?
That went pretty good if they did that. They thought very far ahead. Yes, James.
Okay, I got all kinds of things. First of all, what you said you were saying to your daughter, like as someone who never met his dad, man, if you would have been my father, everything would have been different. Like I clearly, this bed would have been made 10 minutes before the interview. So,
oh, man.
So I could have used you, sir, but whatever. I don't think you're that much older than me, so I don't think it's possible. Also, here's the thing, because you're talking about stand-up. Years ago, when I was starting in Vegas, my good buddy Shuley from the Stern Show met you, and you gave him unbelievable advice that he then gave me. So in a way,
oh, cool.
Like you, like, you're like a comedy godfather in a sense, because he told me, like he said to you, like he was new and he was worried because he didn't have 20 minutes. And I don't think you were doing stand up yet. I think that was in your like hiatus. And you were like, yo, man, I don't got 20 minutes. Go out there and take chances every day. Don't have a set. And so we always kind of had that. So I appreciate that, man. I just want you to know that when you're talking about like you took a break, you were still influencing dudes. And now here I am making my bed finally. Look, it came full circle, Rob. Even though I'm from Vegas and I hate the state of Arizona, we coming to peace, baby. Let's
I know. I know. It's all blending into one now, every state. But I thank you for that. I will say this, like all the best comedians, the great ones, they talked to the guys if they knew that the guys were serious, and the advice that they gave was amazing. I remember seeing Jerry Seinfeld like 1982, and he was in the he had just done his 80 he's just done like his 42nd Tonight Show. That's like 42 times 5 minutes, you know. And then we watched him, and he murdered, and it was like, you know, brilliantly executed material. And you know, it was in this little tiny club, which is basically like a bar, but I'm sure he made like $10,000 in 2 nights or whatever back in the 80s. That was good money, you know. That's good money now. And so maybe $7,500. But anyway, the point is, after the show, we're in the middle of the street. He's waiting for his cab. That was when there was cabs. And it was like 6, 7, 8 comedians from San Francisco. And we're like, please give us the wisdom. Because everybody thinks, this guy, you must know something. Please give us the goo-goo stuff. And he said, hey, you guys got to take the swearing out. I said, if you take the, what are you going to do? You're going to say the F word on Tonight Show? Let me tell you, if you take the swearing out and then it's not funny without the swear words, then it's not funny. I got to go. And then he looked down and he shook my hand, you know, and then he was going to leave. And I went to shake his hand again. He looked at me and said, hey, it's the same hand. Anyway, so a couple of years later, he wouldn't remember that. A couple of years later, I did the David Letterman, and he was such a lovely man. He followed me out. I was at the Improv, and I did a set. He ran after me. So I just want to say, I saw your set on Letterman, and you were had balls of iron, balls of iron. I remember that's such a nice thing to say, and coming from such a great comedian. And he shook my hand once, and I waited for it. And he brought it up again, and I was like, hey. And I wanted to say it's the same hand, but I was so glad. I was like, thank you very much.
And it's funny, though. I feel like, I mean, I'm not a comic. James is a comic. And you hear stories of certain comics that are the patron saints of certain areas. Like Patrice O'Neill in the East Coast is known as one of the guys that mentored a lot of people.
And let me tell you, Patrice was a genius. I appreciate him more now than ever because, you know, he's just one of the other comics and I didn't get a chance to see all his material. But then, like, his set construction, his joke construction, how he made himself the butt of the jokes was just totally relaxing for the audience. And you see, and you just appreciate, like, there's an artistry there to Patrice that, like, is wonderfully perfect. And it's not in your face. It's just gently, you know, he doesn't want to show you how smart he is. He wants to show you what he lacks. And that's the same thing. That's like when Louis C.K. is like, he is not pushing it on the audience about their own moral shortcomings. He's getting them to question their own moral shortcomings from his own. Right. And it's just a better way to get the audience to relax and laugh. And so, but it's great to see like certain guys absolutely were, you know, for me, like Dana Carvey in San Francisco was the most talented guy, to come out. It was like two guys. There was like Robin Williams and then Dana Carvey. And then these guys were so talented. The you know, talent scouts, when there used to be talent scouts, they came up to San Francisco. Is there more of these guys around here? And that's how I got found out. And then, but Dana was a guy like, you know, you don't know. Hollywood didn't know what to do with him. He could do 1,000 different impressions. He was electrifying live. Before he was famous all over the country, he was really famous in San Francisco. And if I was lucky enough to open for him for a few times, and this guy, there'd be lines around the block to go see Dana Carvey. And he was electric. And like the other comedians, we were good in San Francisco, but we watch him and go, okay, we're good, but we can't do that. Right. And that's the kind of guy he was. And so, but it was a really good lesson for me. It was like, I drove down to Hollywood one time with him when he was doing the show. And what happens is they said, this guy's super talented. We got to put him in a show, but they don't know what show to do. So he was on this like helicopter cop show. Helicopter cop show. That was like his first show down. And like, they said, don't worry, we'll give you the last 5 minutes. You can just ad lib, do whatever you want. And he's like, all right, I guess. So he's in the helicopter telling jokes in the last 5 minutes of the series. And I went like, man, if they don't know what to do with this guy, the most talented guy I've ever known, then what the hell, what am I worried about? I should be worried. You know, this guy's the greatest. Well, what am I worried? And it took a lot of pressure off. And I said, I'll just find my own way because Hollywood doesn't know what to do with the most talented guys. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and then he got on Saturday Night Live, which was the perfect place for him.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's funny. I don't want to get too into SNL yet, but I mean, what I do see with your cast of SNL, you guys, more than any other cast, seem to stay friends years after. You're still doing movies together. You're still you hang out together. You always seem to have stories together, where other cast members from previous or post, they don't seem to have that cohesiveness.
Well, that's all due to Adam Sandler really having such this superstar worldwide success and, you know, being gracious enough to invite his friends along for that incredible ride. And it's great. You know, I remember telling Adam years ago for a specific movie I won't mention, but I said, don't hire me for this. Hire Nick Nolte. Like, just say, you can get anybody you want. I said, you know, he said, just do it. I mean, like, you can get anybody and like, you should, because you're great. And he said, no, I wanted you to do it. And I go, why? And he said, because, you know, if I ask you to go climb that palm tree over there, I know you're dumb enough to do it, you know? And I said, basically what he's saying is I don't have to take time to explain what the funny is. I know you'll get it. And right. I know that you'll trust it. And I'll know that if it's not working, we'll, in the middle of a scene, get it to a place where it is working. And if it is working, we'll get it to a place where it's working even better. And I think that's the key to our working relationship. Mm-hmm. Is the fact that to make something that ain't good in a scene, and to make something that's really good even better. And so there's like certain scenes that I'm very proud of, and like in that relationship where like there was, when it had a lot more energy, when we did 50 First Dates, when you were allowed to do malleable with your own ethnicity. I mean, right. Like, so, you know, I'm Filipino on my mom's side, and I'm Jewish on my dad's side. Does that mean I can't play Filipino? I can't. So there are these like kind of societal bullshit rules these days. But back then, when it was just funny, it was funny. I played this Hawaiian guy in 50 First Dates, which was totally legit because I grew up, you know, every summer of my life, my grandfather lived in Hawaii. So we'd go and spend the summers in Hawaii. And then my brother was in the army over there. So that's where we go. And so get tan as quick as you can so that you don't get the shit beat out of you by Hawaiians. And, so I learned that, you know, that there's the pigeon talk and I knew it. And, you know, it ain't perfect, but like, I'm very proud of that role. So we were shooting a scene. And again, when you're writing something on paper, you're not on the set. So when you're on the set, there are other things that could happen that could, you know, that could need work or whatever. You don't know. Mm-hmm. So he wrote a scene where Drew Barrymore is driving up in her car and he wanted to get the very interesting car, cool looking car, was her having a Volkswagen Thing, which is cool, you know, because the top can open and whatever, and you could see her better and the whole thing can come down, including the front windshield. Mm-hmm. So whatever, it's good for filming. And eccentric looking car. So so basically every day he's got to meet her in a new way, you know, because her brain has a problem. She can't remember stuff. So one of the ways is he's getting mugged on the side of the road by me. And so the thing is, she's supposed to see me get mugging him. And then she drives up and then hits me with a baseball bat. That's the joke. But what happened was it's on an uphill incline. So we're waiting. and Drew's driving the car. We're waiting and we're waiting. So, okay, we have to fill that moment. So I throw him on the ground and I just start kicking him, you know, which just seems physically even funny. And he goes, and so we had to come up with some dialogue, and I go, "You come over here, you eat our pineapple, make my sister clean your hotel room." And he says, "What does that have to do with anything?" And we came up with that. And then she hits me with a bat, which is another thing that he didn't tell me about, the character and the thing. And that was it. But that morning when I got there, I always like to get the set first because I want to see what the set is like. I did a couple movies with Sylvester Stallone, and the big stars always come last, which I think is a huge disadvantage, because if you get there early, you could see what's going on and you could play with that. And then maybe if there's like a extras, you can, you know, you can get to know them, and maybe they can laugh in the scene or whatever. And that could be fun. So, I got there early and I noticed they were setting up, and I said, "I've seen this before." It was this beautiful green area in Oahu on the south side of the island. And I said, "I know this is beautiful. Where is it? Where have I seen this?" And north side of the island, sorry. And I said, "I've seen this. Where is it? I've seen it." And I said, and the DP, Dean Semler, was like, "This is where we shot with Spielberg. We shot Jurassic Park." And I'm like,
"Oh, wow.
The Running of the Dinosaurs? Is it was here? Did you shot that here?" They said, yeah. "Yeah, we shot that here." And so I was like thrilled. I couldn't wait to run with the dinosaurs, you know? So after Drew hit me, I just started running. And then she, you know, goes with it. She started chasing me with the baseball bat. And then the camera guy smartly started, I didn't know that wasn't in the, you know.
In the script, right?
In the script. So he started picking up the camera and started doing just moving it to get the the running thing of Drew, and it was very funny, and then it ended up being a screamingly funny thing in the movie.
It's a great scene in the movie for sure. I mean, I know the movie very well. That's a great scene.
That kind of stuff, if you're open to it and if you're having fun and if you can, you figure out what isn't working, make it work, and what is working, make it better, and just go with it and just trust it. So those are the things to make a movie. You know, and then when you do something like that, then you have like, he trusts you forever.
Right. I get that.
So,
you know, what's funny about it? Cause there are, you know, you've been in a lot of movies, obviously, and there are certain lines that I know I read this years ago, and I think it's true that Adam gave you the line, "You can do it," which you open your special with, just initially to make sure that your life would be a living hell, because he knew you'd get quoted that the rest of your life. There's truth to that, right?
There is truth to that, because I was on Saturday Night Live, and before he was famous, I was famous, and it was because of the copy machine guy, that a character that I did, where a guy who says people's names,
right.
You know, in the office, you know, Steve, Steve-O, you know, right. Ralph, the Ralphinator, and then...
You just made me so happy, by the way.
And then, Ralph, Ralphie, all right, having his own podcast biz, the Ralphinator, stuck in the elevator-rama, sweating his balls off. First day to Tola. So he, what was it saying? I'm sorry.
About You Can Do It.
Oh, yeah. So
you were more famous.
He saw people yelling that at me. And I think he enjoyed that, my discomfort. He loves that. Mm-hmm. When, like, you know, as long as nobody's getting hurt, but they're uncomfortable, that's a fun thing for him. I think that's a natural, you know, joy for him. That's what happens when you grow up with a lot of brothers and sisters. When somebody's getting tortured and not too badly, there's enjoyment and laughter. And so I think he did that. Yeah. And he called me up 2 weeks before the movie came out and said, "Hey buddy, movie's coming out 10 days. You're not going to be able to go anywhere without hearing 'You Can Do It.'" And I remember a chill going up my, you know, just literally going up my spine. And then we're like, he's serious. That's what they called kidding on the square. You know, you're kidding, but you really mean it.
Right.
And like, I remember that. And it's been like almost 20 years now.
You know, it's been over 20 years. I was at the Waterboy premiere in New York City.
Oh, really?
The actual, you know, I walked the red carpet, which was hilarious because I was friends with, not so much anymore, but Richard Kind and Jennifer Esposito, who's a good friend of mine.
Oh, yeah.
And I went with them and, you know, Jennifer, what's her name? Lopez was there. I mean, it was filled with celebs there.
Oh, yeah.
But it was funny because Jen and Richard were on a show called Spin City at the time. And yeah. I went with them to the premiere. And Jen gets out of the car. And everyone goes, Jen. They're all taking pictures of her on the red carpet. And then Richard gets out, Richard. Then I get out. And of course, it's just silence. But why would they be? They don't know me. But it was a very uncomfortable moment to just go walk in silence up the red carpet with them. And then we went and saw the movie. And Adam spoke. It was a great moment. It was like one of my highlights.
That was a really good movie. Yeah. I was there that night, too.
Yeah, so much fun. And then, you can do it, obviously. But there's certain lines that I say to this day. One pee-pee touch is a thing that I've said maybe a million times, which is from Don't Mess With the Zohan, which I love.
That was like my, as all the roles I've done with Adam, I think that one is the best. I think I did the best in that one because I'm unrecognizable. That's the best compliment I get. I got to work with this doctor named Dr. Salame, who's a Palestinian doctor. And I worked with him on that accent. And then I also got to work with another teacher just to make sure, because we had to do, John Turturro and I had to do one scene in Arabic. And so I really wanted to do it right and be respectful because I'm working with other actors, this one Egyptian actor and this other guy's who's a real Palestinian. And I wanted to be respectful with the character, not make a caricature, but also play a funny character. And I think if your intention is to get laughs and not be mean spirited towards the person you're playing, I think it's okay.
Right.
And so that movie, I don't think there was any scene where I wasn't literally bouncing or jumping. I think the physicality in that scene, I don't think I'll ever get that again. Cause it was just like, it was just bouncing. And I watched that and I get lost and I go, I don't know who that person is. That's when it works.
It's just such a great scene. And also not to keep bouncing around movies, but just cause I'm such a fan, your uncredited scene in Chuck and Larry is maybe one of my favorite scenes of all time.
I know I got more shit for that. And in retrospect, if they asked me to do that again, I wouldn't do it. But at the time, the guy who did the makeup, his name is Kazu, and he worked with Baker, Rick Baker, who's who was an Academy Award winning special effects guy. And this is the best artist that Rick Baker ever had. And I got to meet Rick on that movie. And this guy named Kazu, he doesn't even work in show business anymore. He's such a great artist. He just does art pieces that he sells for, tens of thousands of dollars each. And one of the last movies he did was this one with me. And he made that character and he's Japanese. And I said to myself, well, if he's okay with it, right, what am I worried about?
Yeah. I mean, we just had a thing like that happen on the show too, which if the people that are not insulted, that are supposed to be insulted, aren't insulted, why do you care?
And then also like, why are the most sensitive people in society getting to choose what everybody else gets to watch?
Yeah. Right.
Very funny thing. Yeah. And I just remember it was a short little burst. And like, if I'm going to be in a movie for a short, you can't have that kind of manic energy and that insanity for a whole movie because it'll just wear the audience out. But if you have a cameo and you're just there for a couple of scenes, you can hit it harder than anybody. And that's my job, is to do that. And so when I would just to make those guys laugh their asses off, frankly. And so every little thing was just to make them, physically. And the greatest compliment that I received on that movie was when it came to the turnaround, when those guys, because they did my stuff first, and then when they turned around and it was Kevin James and Adam Sandler, both of them said, after a few takes, we're not doing this. You can't be here for this. So they literally got rid of me to do their shots. And I said, I got both of you motherfuckers. Yeah, I got you. Right. I got you, you know. And I never broke character. So I kept. But the thing about it was, and God bless Dennis Dugan. He's the guy who came up with, you got to come up with like a beautiful thing to say about the rings. And Dennis, it was like giving somebody like a diamond, it's like, no, there's no beginning. There's no end. Because it's a circle. There's no beginning. So just a guy... You know when somebody gets it and they're still explaining to you how annoying that is? Okay. So it was just, it was a run. It was a run that just keeps going. And it's one of the things where like, if you're lucky, you make something funny and then it's not funny again. And if you keep doing it and it's like, is it going to get funny? And then it does get funny again and then it doesn't. And it's a weird little rhythm. It's like good comedy, like anything. It's a rhythm and it's music to it.
Tim Meadows was the king of that figured out a way to keep taking something so long and eventually becomes funny again.
Yeah. And if he thinks it's funny, cause like Tim thinks it's funny. And then like, you have to think it's not just a thing of something that's intellectualized. In other words, it's just something they think is funny. You got to make it like it feels funny. You know, and I remember, like, you know, that's another thing that, like, Dana Carvey was brilliant about. Like, he had to think it's funny and feel it's funny and be silly. He had to feel silly before he went on stage and did whatever impressions and whatever he was doing. And there's something to that. There really is. It's just like the audience picks up on the stuff. They know if you're having fun on stage. They really do.
Sure. Absolutely. And, I think that, by the way, that holds true with podcasting as well. That holds true with everything in entertainment. It's like you have to be as real as possible because the audience is smarter than people giving credit for. You know,
absolutely. And they're picking up on everything: your body language, your eye contact, and just and if you're really into it, and if you are, and then they can still tune out. But for the people, see, the audience, the thing that I've learned over these many years, if I've learned anything, it's that the audience has to do their job. And if you're a performer, if you're an actor, if you're an artist, if you're a podcaster, be careful to not do their job. Don't over-explain for them. They have to come to you and you have to give them the opportunity to come and do their part, which is be involved in it. Right.
It's funny, though, because we've introduced video on the show. And I come from radio. I did radio for 20 years.
I had a show that was
on a bunch of stations. And when I started in podcasting, because I'm so auditory-based, Shannon, I would explain things as they're happening because of the audio listener, right?
Right.
And to see everything. But on the show, we've done crazy things with, like, you know, Howard Sterny type stuff. And I found, like, when I listen back to shows, I'm like, okay, she's taking off her clothes now. I'm like, oh my God, I sound like such a dirty.
Yeah.
But you kind of have to do it, you know, or else the audio listeners are like, what the fuck is happening right now?
You were lucky to be in radio during those days.
It's
tougher now.
Yeah, much. I left radio. I started a podcast, left radio. The show was still on like 60 stations at the time, but because I knew the money was leaving, it just wasn't making me money. So it became a hobby that I was making a little bit of money in. And I decided to pivot to podcasting, and it's been working out great for us here.
That's great. That's congrats. You know, congrats. Because first of all, anybody making a living in any facet of show business it's ridiculous. I mean, it is absolutely insane. It's one of those things that, like, you have to believe in it so much and have the talent and have to put in the work. And that's what it is. It's putting in the work. For most people to go, like, I don't know why it didn't work out, because you didn't put in the work.
Right now, Shannon is at our studio. That's our studios in the East Village. There's another show going on right behind you in our other studio.
Fantastic.
I just don't go into the studios as much because, again, the same thing we said earlier, make people feel comfortable. It's important. So if we can do it in Zoom, and we wouldn't get you in studio right now in New York. So it's great to have Zoom to bring you into the show.
It's good. It's changed everything. You know, it really has. And it's going to, like anything, I think this experience and, like, what's happening on movie sets, because I know I got friends calling me in Europe and telling me that they're shooting there and how they're doing it. You know, there's, like, people who have a red tag, and then you walk in the red area, and then people with the blue tag. They're not going to stop working. They're not going to stop. Concerts are going to come back again.
Of course,
they have to. Find a way to do it. I mean, people are not going to end their lives over this. In 1918, which was 10 times worse for the, you know, the maybe 100 times worse for the Spanish flu. You know, things got back to normal again. They have to. I mean, you're not going to stop people from hugging.
Well, look, of course, we'll figure it out. That's human nature. We'll figure it out. Last oral sex to you from me, because I'm such a fan. Deuce Bigalow 1 and 2, love them both crazy, right? But this is not your line, but one of my favorite lines in Deuce Bigalow 2, which I don't know why I'm just bringing it up, was when the guy had to pretend he was a gay escort, and he just says, very, like, against his will, anybody want a blowjob? It's one of my favorite lines in a movie of all time. I just fucking love it so much.
That movie had some really hilarious individual moments, but, like, it has to glue together. And that's what you have to be really careful making a movie. And I'm not proud of that movie, but, like, it didn't have any heart to it.
Yeah, the first one had more heart. The first one obviously had more heart.
But the second one was just for the fans of the first one. It's an all-out, balls-out movie. And truthfully, too much plot in it. You want to just go for jokes. But some of the stuff, if you're not careful, you could have a joke that could sink your movie. That's what I learned from that. Like the girl, it's just Dan Graney, who's one of the geniuses of The Simpsons. You know, the Simpsons writer. He's a brilliant guy. He said, why not have a girl with the penis on her face wearing a veil, and she gets excited, and I said, that's great. Let's just do it. And the next thing you know, we're shooting it, and then it just I can just tell the movies. I mean, the audience could either, if they don't go with that, why would they want to go with that? Then the movie can't follow that, even if they do go with that. So, anything, whether it's any movie, any TV show, any series or whatever you have. I mean, it's a house of cards. In a podcast, it's a house of cards. If you start to pull too many things with it, try to control it too much, try to manipulate whatever, it's going to collapse, and you have to be careful of that. So that's one of the things, you know, you learn as you go. And the weird thing about show business is that you learn as you go, but if you really screw up, you're done. You don't learn anymore because you're out. And that's one of the things, that's a truism of it. I remember Michael Caine saying, you know, they'll give you like one bomb, you know, maybe two, but if you got three in a row, you're fucking done.
That's true. You know? Good words to live by.
And that's it. You know, so it's like, it's a tough business. Don't kid yourself. It's tough.
We got to wrap up soon, but one of the other things I was going to say that was near and dear to my heart, in your special, Asian Mom Mexican Kids on Netflix now, you discuss sweatpants life, living in sweatpants, which is all I do. Shannon, my staff, like Shannon will tell you, if I show up to the office in jeans, they go, oh, what's the occasion? Because that's me dressed up. I Ralph, live in sweatpants.
Ralph, the Ralphinator, let me tell you something. Sweatpants are bad. You have to have your fat pants, your medium fat pants, and your regular fat pants, and your skinny pants. At this time of our lives, we'll be spending most of our time in our fat to medium fat pants. If you get to the very fat pants, you got to work out. And the thing about sweatpants is they lie to you. You don't know how fat you're getting. So my wife threw all the sweatpants away, all my sweatpants.
Oh,
and that was a good thing.
But here, I've not even a suit. I own one suit. I never want to fucking wear it.
You got to go to the gym. You got to go. I'm back at it now.
How fat you think I am? Because you said it several times. I'm actually in decent shape, you know. But just so you know,
you told me you were sweating your balls off in the elevator. Well, and the girl wasn't.
I run hot. That's why I've always run hot. I hate being 80s hot for me. And that's even as a kid. I never wanted to put my jacket on in the winter. I just run hot. That's just who I am.
Were you one of those guys? You shook somebody's hand and it was like drenched sweat.
No, you know, it's not even that. I don't know what it is. So, you know, what's funny is that if nowadays you go everywhere, they take your temperature, right?
Yeah.
My temperature is always low, lower than average, like 96, 97 is where I run. So that means that when it's hot, I feel it more because my body temperature is lower.
Yeah, that's true.
And cold doesn't bother me as much. And that's just my body temperature. So I am actually used COVID to lose like 30 pounds. I ran 11 miles yesterday. I'm like really used COVID to get back into good shape. So
that's
good.
On
my way there. Shannon got vegan during COVID. How much did you lose, Shannon?
Probably like 30 pounds, but I started a little bit before the quarantine, but I didn't gain a single pound during quarantine. And I was just sitting on my couch with my laptop the whole time. So yeah.
Right. And so what do you count that to being a vegan? What do you eat?
Yeah. Plants. It's a, you know, plant-based, so I just don't eat meat and cheese and eggs.
Okay.
So bad.
What kind of plants? What plants are you eating?
You know, grass on the street, whatever she finds. Whatever. You know, there's a lot of plants.
I forage. But yeah, I mean vegetables, grains, stuff like that.
She's a
nuts.
And
nuts.
Right? Yeah.
Lots of nuts, yeah. Nuts and nuts. And then so now we're gonna do the first, Shannon, because we already can't believe the hour went by this fast.
That went by fast.
The first time. Ever I saw concert, did drugs, had sex.
So the name of the show is Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll. We end show every week by asking every guest from the dawn of time their first experience with all three. We start with rock and roll, and we mean the first concert you went to that we're going to know, not your fucking friend's local band that no one's ever heard of, and on your own volition, not the one your mother took you to. That we never heard of, you know, a band that you said, I want to go see this band. And it doesn't have to be rock. It could be anything.
No. I think the first one I really went to go see was Talking Heads.
Oh, that is a great one. Excellent. I don't think we've ever heard that on the show. That's a
79.
Wow. That's really great. I like that.
Yeah, early.
Great.
That was like, yeah. And they were amazing. And David it Kirk. Was, yeah. And they had like, you know, and my friend thought it was a really good idea to make pot brownies. Mm-hmm. And I'd never been high before.
Oh, so they're going to do a 1-2 punch here? First drug?
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
All right.
So then I eat one. And then, of course, you know the old story. I don't feel anything. I'm fine. Maybe I need to take another one. And they're like, yeah, take another one. And they're like, and then they're like, I still don't feel anything.
Oh man.
And then you think, and then you get there, they go, I'll just do one more. And then when it hits you from your getting stoned from your gut up to your brain and down to your toes, it was just, and then, you know, seeing other people who were equally on other crazier stuff. It was, you know, people were jumping on stage and getting thrown off the stage. This guy did like, it saw like the guys coming from the stage left and stage right security. And he just does a dive, a full on gainer out into the, in, into the audience. And I was like, and I was high and it was ridiculous. And it was a great concert.
That's cool. And you, that's a double whammy. So your first drug to experience. And your first concert. Yeah,
I mean, I tried to get high before that, and it was like behind the at the football, high school football place. And this is a lot to let you know about my hometown. Literally the first time, it was just rolling leaves and just coughing and not being high at all. And a security police guy came by. What are you kids doing back here? Get out of here.
Let me just say, I've never really referred to them as a police guy before, but we'll go.
I don't know if he's a full on police guy, but you know, he just. So anyway, that was not the best experience.
And then, earlier today, it was the fire guys that came to get me out of the elevator.
I feel like you're a police guy before you're a policeman. I think it's like JB. It's like you're not quite the varsity yet. You're just the guy, man.
Yeah, I think he's more security than actual cop, you know?
Fair enough
of a police guy. He had like, he had some authority to him. Okay. All right, you kids, get the hell out of there. Let me see. The first sexual experience?
An actual penetration. And because we have a lot of women in the adult industry, we throw in the term on your own desire as opposed to, you know, we have to make it sound politically correct. So.
Yes. Well, this was a very consensual on my part and the person I was with. It was at her house at 15. And I remember very well because just when things actually got to the place where they needed to get to after much begging and pleading. It was actually just the very beginning where like, this is amazing. And her mom came home.
Her mom came home. Oh, I thought you were gonna say you came immediately. So, but no, you did have penetration. It just stopped.
Yes. It just, and then I remember specifically getting thrown off the bed onto my knees. They raging, you know what, onto my knees in the floor with my pants down around my ankles and just running out of the house.
Oh, man, that's a great first one. That's a really good. And you were 15. You both were 15?
I think she was the older girl taking advantage of the young.
Oh, so she wasn't a virgin. You were.
I think she was. She said she was, but I don't know if she was. But she was older.
Oh, okay.
Much older. Months. No, she was a year older. And a year ahead. She should have known better.
We'll do the plugs. Obviously, Asian Mama Mexican Kids is out now on Netflix. You were also in the last Sandler movie, Hubby Halloween, which I watched.
Yeah.
Anything else you want to plug right now?
Well, I am excited to I'm doing these major league, minor league ballparks. I'll be in Hickory, South Carolina. South Carolina, North Carolina. I'm doing it. It's right. This week. And it is very exciting. Hickory. And Augusta, I'll be doing minor league parks there. And I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be fun. I just want to perform and get out there. And I'll be shooting a new movie out here in Arizona pretty soon. And, yeah, but I'd love for people to go watch. We also, Real Rob is a comedy.
Right. I watched a couple episodes, but is that over? Because the last season was a couple years ago.
So I did two seasons, yeah. Right. Two seasons. But the second season, you got to watch.
Watching the second season this week.
Get to episode six. I mean, got 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. They're honestly the best things I've ever done. But like Mike Madsen, we do a scene about a real low budget movie, and Adam Sandler's in that episode. I think it's episode 6, and it's hilarious. Honestly, it's really funny. 7 is really great, and I'm very proud of that.
And your wife is in it as well.
Yeah, I figure, you know, let's do this and have fun. I'm gonna, like, my kid's gonna be in the movie with me. The next one, it's fun. You know, I want them to have a good time. I don't want them to work without me. You know, because show business is bad, scary. But with me, I know I can control it and have a good time.
All right,
can have a good time.
Speaking of people without fathers, James, you want to give your plugs?
I got three things. I'll try and do it quick. First of all, the Commissioner Comedy Podcast, Comedy Etiquette, Personal Journey, Motivation, which I always say this, Rob, at the end, when I do this plug, that whether people are comics or not, you listen to my podcast, you'll want to run through a wall. That's how fired up. That's how the fuck I feel after listening to you today. I might even just like trade. I might just give you my podcast. I can't do it as good as you. It's unbelievable. Oh,
God bless you, James. You're great, man.
Thank you, brother. Commissioner Comedy, check that out. I'm also going to be emceeing, doing warm-up in Royersford, PA, if you're in the Philly area, for Soul Joel's Comedy Lounge. I'm back. I'm handling business. I'm doing it. I'm working. What up? And then by the time this airs, my new website will be up on Make Your Bed Daily. It'll probably be out, and it's going to be a good one where I just make my bed. And I just landed a movie. 30 minutes after doing it, I got text. See, you're right. I'm successful now, everybody. Making my fucking bed.
Jamie, you did it, man. And they can go to robschneider.com also, Ralph, if people want to see my dates.
Cool. And also, by the way, James, I will say this. You are very good at giving your plugs. Some people are not good.
Yeah.
You're very good at it. Shannon, your plug.
Pro wrestling, dog.
Let's see if Shannon can do as good as James.
James, I don't have that level of energy. But before I do my plugs, I just wanted to be like an annoying fangirl and say, Rob, 51st Dates is one of my favorite movies of all time. Oh, and you doing that character earlier brought me so much joy. So thank you so much for doing that.
Thank you so much.
You can listen to my podcast, The Thing Is Ding. We talk about bad dates, fighting, and ghosts. And wherever, you can follow me on Instagram at ShannonLee6982.
And that's
Shannon.
Ever since, sure. Well, yeah, James, go ahead.
Oh, Shannon, do you want me to do your plugs for you right now? To see if I can? Yo, you got to listen to The Thing Is with Shannon. It is the best. I've been on it several times. It's about dating and ghosts. They should be together, goddammit.
Rob, do you believe in ghosts out of curiosity?
I believe in something, but not physical ghosts. I believe that we have them in our heads. Yes.
Okay. I like that answer a lot, by the way. All right. So just follow me everywhere at I Am Ralph Sutton. You're already listening to the show. My other podcast about health and wellness is called The Good Sugar Podcast that I do with Marcus Antebi, founder of the Juice Press brand. And we'll do a song of the week like we do every week at thestrshow.com/playlist. And we'll do your daughter. Why not? We'll throw in an L. King song. How do we not do that with you, Rob?
Thank you.
Right. And Rob, honestly, as you could probably have told throughout this hour, I'm a fucking huge fan and really happy that you took time out.
Thank you, Ralph. I really appreciate it. It's been fun to come on. Those are some good memories there. We'll see you, James. Thank you, Shannon. It was a pleasure to meet you. Good luck with everything. All right.
See you next week on the SDR show.
Listening to the SDR show.